Hello, this is Darlene. Is anyone else there?
Darlene, I'm out here. How about you?
Pat, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. Anything good happen this week?
No, I was just going to ask you, where are you located?
I'm in New York. The city of
what part of New York?
60 miles north of New York City in Middletown.
Oh, I'm from Buffalo, Niagara Falls.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And I've been in Florida since 1983.
Oh, my goodness. Why did you come north to Florida from, I mean, north to Buffalo from Florida?
What? Why did I mean, I've been living in Florida since 1983.
Oh, so you were originally in Buffalo and now you're in Florida? Wait a minute.
Yeah, I grew up in Buffalo and Niagara Falls, and then I relocated in 1983 to Florida, West Palm Beach area.
Oh, okay, so you've been down in Florida for, what, 34 years?
Yeah, quite a while.
Wow.
Quite a while. Yeah.
Do you miss what you were living through up here in Buffalo?
No, not at all. Not at all. Do you have your own coaching business?
Yes, I do.
Oh my gosh! How long?
In 2002, I went to Salt Lake City, Utah, to go through the Franklin Covey and the Legacy Learn program. I don't know if you're familiar with it, and did the training through there and got certifications. And then have just continued to add different topics to my coaching practice.
I received some of the Covey training as a staff developer for the school district. I received Covey training.
Okay. How's that working?
Yeah.
Good evening.
Good evening.
How are we all doing this evening?
Good. Is this Dave?
Yes, this is Dave, yes.
I didn't know whether it was Cleveland or Dave or someone new.
Well, apparently there are a few people who are actually taking the class through the audios only, so they couldn't make the time, and they're listening to the audio. So this has been kind of an odd structure this time, seems like, the class. Cleveland is actually on an airplane right now, so he will not be joining us tonight. But... So it'll be, again, a small and intimate group here today. All right, so any burning questions from either last week's discussion or from the reading today? We're going to talk about the S's and C's especially. Anything burning before we get started? All right. So you guys all have the slides, obviously.
Yes.
Yep, and so let's do a little review of session, our last session. Again, that behavioral style chart, critical component, in practice drawing that, creating your own little version, if you will, your own little story that goes on how you draw that out. You know, find a way to market your disc if you decide to market that way. The high D. Interesting people. The upper left-hand quadrant, they're active and task-oriented. They are direct and decisive. They want to get things done. They are natural leaders, so they will tend to lead. They will tend to assume leadership. When no one else steps in, or before people have a chance to step in sometimes, they will just pick up and start leading. It's just very natural for them. They can be distracted by other tasks, chasing to get more things done. And they tend to overuse that directness that can put people off because they're just a little too direct in what they say. We also talk quite a bit about, again, we talk about the high D at their best. and they're high, and the high D at their worst. So part of the overall message here for DISC in general is that, you know, and you're going to hear this all the time, there's not a good profile or a bad profile. They're just different. They bring different strengths to the team. So, but that may mean, though, well, it's not good and bad profiles. There may be good and bad profiles for certain jobs, certain kind of relationships, that kind of thing. For example, if I want someone bright and bubbly at my front desk, I likely don't want a high D. They're a little too task-oriented. But they bring good things to the team. So keep in mind as I go through all these styles together that there's always an at their best, there's always an at their worst. One is not better for another than another in general, but for particular tasks, certain profiles may fit better. All right, talk a little bit about coaching the high D, kind of questions you do want to ask them. What kind of questions do you want to ask a high D? Any thoughts on that from last week's session? Questions to ask any of our styles are going to fall into two basic categories. Things you want to ask them because it's going to resonate with them. They're going to hear that. They're going to go, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that's what I would definitely want to do. So, like for a high D, when you ask them about results, it's going to resonate with them. What are you going to get out of this? How's this going to work? What are you going to do? That's going to resonate with them. The other question you want to ask, based on the style, are questions of things that are in their blind spots. Talk about the Johari window way back in week one, and the fact that they have blind spots. Blind spots of the high D include things like, how is this going to impact others? What others might think of this? And what can go wrong? Because high Ds tend to make their plan off on their shirt sleeve, if you will, and don't always think about what might go wrong. So ask them, what can go wrong here is a good way to make sure you stay on task with them, make sure they see the blind spot and say, okay, I better make sure I'm ready for that. So questions about the high D? Okay. And the high I, in the upper right-hand quadrant of that model, they are, again, active, but they're more people-oriented. They tend to be optimistic and upbeat. They can be, at their worst, where they get to all talk and no action. So as a coach, something you're going to be watching for is, are they committing to things, which are good? Do they actually do them? Because they may find ways to not do them in some cases. The high I is they're natural influencers. They are great communicators. All high I's in general have a great way of communicating with others and getting people around them excited about things. Like the high D, they tend to be leaders. They tend to be more visionary than the high D. And that's an important aspect for certain types of leadership, to have that vision. And, as I mentioned before, great communicators, they do a great job of communicating the vision. Here's where I am, and here's where I want to go. And let's all get behind this and do it together. And people get excited by the high I that way, because they're great at painting that picture. They also can be easily distracted, so in this case not by other tasks, but by other people. And so that can be a challenge for them as they deal with what's going on around them, where the distractions are other people in the room, and therefore people who are talking to them may not feel quite as connected as they might otherwise. They tend to overuse their optimism, and they may be talking to people without listening to them. So those things we want to help watch for with our high eyes. And coaching them, well, again, they have a lot of number one priorities, so you have to get getting things organized there and make sure that taking action on the right things for them. Questions, again, to ask the high I, again, focus on what's going to reinforce them, as well as what their blind spots are. So supporting them and helping them create that vision is a big part of what your coaching is going to do, but also looking for downsides. So your plan doesn't work. What's going to happen? Okay. And, again, timelines for expectations. When can you realistically expect to complete this? And as a coach, you know, we tend to, as a coach, we'll sit there and say, you can do more. You can do more. With a high I sometimes, it may be, you can actually do a little less and still be okay. They may come back with plans that are too optimistic. And you sit there and say, yeah, rather than, you know, rather than we're going to do 47, let's try and do 10. 10 is a good place to start. So help them keep things realistic and keep on track that way. All right, that's the high D and the high I real quick. Any questions about them?
Dave?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, the book, the Catalyst Coaching Workbook, mentioned that there's approximately 3% of the population are high D and 17% are high I.
That is correct. That's a rough estimate. That's about right.
So what that says in reference to organizations, and then the high D-I-S, the high S increases to like 70% or 60-some percent, if I remember, would I remember reading that.
Exactly. Yeah. What's that tell you? That's a great pickup, by the way. What's that tell you about organizations? So D's and I's tend to go into leadership positions. They tend to run the organizations. They're both active, fast-paced, quick decisions, want quick things done quickly. Your S's and your C's, which make up, 80% of the population.
Oh.
Yeah.
So that's what the teams, that's what, like, project teams are made of then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a good project team can have a combination of different people on their team, and the D's want to rush ahead and so do the I's. S and C's want to hold back and say, wait a minute, let's just check this out a little more. And that is a source of conflict in an organization. It's also one of the big reasons why, not intuitively obvious, but it's reasons why change in organizations, especially the bigger they get, the harder it is. Because the D's and the I's, who are making the changes, see it, have the vision, know where it's going. But the guys who actually do most of the work, the S's and the C's, aren't as naturally change-oriented as the D's and the I's are. So when you tend to look at plans for change in an organization, the ones that are well-designed talk a lot about communication and checkpoints and making sure you're still on task, that kind of stuff. Because without that, the D's and the I's may leave the S's and C's in their wake. The S's and C's are doing a lot of the work.
Right.
They may resist the change.
Either that or the S and the D's, do they get a little pissed that they're doing all the work?
I certainly in some cases that they do. I wouldn't say on the whole it is. The S's and C's in general, again, they're not natural leaders. Some are going to be better than others.
Okay.
They don't want to be in charge. We'll talk about S's and C's a lot tonight.
Okay.
They don't really want to be in charge because that's a lot of pressure they don't really enjoy. But it does lead to conflict as D D's and I's tend to move faster than S's and C's do, and it leaves conflict between the groups as they try and get things done. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Other questions? We're going to do what I call the quick quiz here. This is really easy. Really easy. Which of the following animals is most like a high D? A soft, cuddly kitten? A wet nosed, lovable puppy? A quiet, soft bunny rabbit? Or a Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Four.
Four.
Yeah.
Yes, the high D can at times resemble the Tyrannosaurus Rex. The soft, cuddly kitten, not normally what you're going to refer to as a high D. Same thing with a lovable puppy. I mean, Ds are certainly can be lovable, but that's not their, not what they're really known for, being lovable. All right, let's do another one. Which of these statements likely came from a high D? My, you look lovely tonight. Can I help you carry those heavy packages? You had me at hello. Or give me the remote control before I beat you with a 2x4.
Four?
Four.
Do I dare to say four?
Yeah. And again, fairly obvious. I'm not picking on high Ds. It's just that they tend to be rather direct and want to get things done. They're not really focused so much on the personal side of things. These get harder, by the way, as they get into future sessions with the S's and C's, but that's pretty obvious there on the high D, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
The message really being, high D's are fairly easy to recognize. They do tend to stand out. Here's what's a little more difficult for you. Here's the high I, which of the following animals is most like the high I? A black rhinoceros.
No.
A yellow lab.
Mm.
A California sea lion. Or a sea turtle. A little more challenging there, huh?
Yes, it is.
Seriously, you like number two?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, the yellow lab. Lovable, friendly, gregarious, outgoing, that's your high I. Very good. Which statement likely came from a high I? Go ahead. Make my day. One potato, two potato, three potato, four.
No.
You look marvelous.
That one.
Or make him an offer he can't refuse.
Number three?
Number three is a winner. You look marvelous. Okay. Billy Crystal.
William Clinton.
William Clinton. You know, the good example of a high eye. William exactly. And by the way, they're not always totally sincere when they say these things. Not intentionally necessarily lying, but the sincerity may be a little lacking. You'll hear them say, you never looked better, but you realize that you have looked better, et cetera. Okay. Let's talk then, go into the nice discussion about the high S. I find the high S's and high C's to be really fascinating behavioral styles. So, of course, that high S, they're in that lower part of the quadrant, the lower right-hand corner. So like the high I, they share the people orientation. They share the accepting nature. They tend to be rather agreeable. Okay? But they're all at the same time, though, different than the high I because they are going to be more reserved and more thoughtful. They're going to be more moderate paced. And just tended to hold things back in a little bit. Now, interesting exercise. Today I went to a to a bowling outing with a group of people that I didn't know. And just for giggles, I tried to figure people's style out without talking to them. By watching them and by listening to things they said about their bowling, I tried to figure out what their style was. And I got to tell you, it wasn't really all that hard. And I'll cover that why here in a couple minutes to go into more about the high S. So the high S has some things that they are concerned about. I mean, they have, you know, again, in general, more thoughtful, more reserved, but people-oriented. They're nice. They're friendly people, okay? So at their best, I should say something, the natural fear and emotion of the high S. The natural fear of the high S, an emotion, is they're afraid of change. Change deeply upsets them, okay? So they really like the status quo, and they will tend to resist change. If you think back to the original model with Marsh we talked about, the folks who said, the environment's primarily good, and I'm glad because I really can't control it, so I want to make sure I don't make too many waves and make things get out of sync here. So they're trying to avoid that change. And their emotion is a little different. They tend to hide their emotions. So they are not demonstrative in their emotions. They don't scream and yell. They don't, you know, burst out in laughter necessarily all the time. They tend to be much more passive that way. And this creates some challenges because you can't always tell what they're really thinking. Now, I mean, give you guys an example. A couple of years ago, I did a workshop with a bunch of people who were, they knew each other. They were actually from a church. And there were some married couples here in the group. And we did an exercise that got them in the four quadrants, four corners of the room, based on their D, I, S, and C style. Just different exercises, that kind of stuff. And I handed out a piece of paper with some details on it that kind of talked about the four styles and some natural things they had in common and natural things they did, including the behaviors, the fears, and the emotions. And this is a little bit surprising in that the S's collectively raised their hand and said, we don't agree with you on this issue about the emotions. I said, oh, well, tell me what you mean here. And they said, we do have emotions. I said, well, agreed. And we show them routinely. And so we don't think that we say we hide our emotions, but that's necessarily a true statement. I said, all right, well, I understand why you would say that. Let's just do a little survey here. So you guys in the other three corners here, you know these high S's. Do they demonstrate their emotions? And there was roaring laughter from the other corners, especially from the D and the I corners. No, they don't show their emotions. They don't. We don't know what they're thinking. And this now we got into spousal issues here a little bit, and they said, you know, S's were saying, wait a minute, don't you can tell we're mad. Well, sometimes we can tell you're upset, but we have no idea what you're upset about. And when we ask, you won't tell us. So we just kind of figure, okay, you're not going to tell us. We don't know. We just ignore it. So that made the point rather clearly, but it wasn't very popular with the S's. They finally realized that, yeah, what they were trying to do, and what they thought they did in terms of their emotions, others necessarily couldn't see it and therefore didn't react to it. So that's important about the high S. Their communication style tends to be, again, not too demonstrative. They tend to be more quiet. They tend to be very pleasing. But they're not going to use all the superlatives on either side, either really positive or really negative, to describe what they're thinking and how they want to be communicated to. Well, how about the high S at their best? So at their best, by high S is even-tempered, patient, helpful, accommodating. Some people say that S stands for salt of the earth. The highest is tend to be natural team players and natural followers. They do not want to take the lead. They don't want to be in charge. They don't want the limelight. The high S is willing to pitch in and help and will get most things done. You give a high S something to do, they're generally going to do it for you. They truly enjoy a small circle of friends that they do a lot of things with. They're relaxed, easygoing, and slow to anger. They are loyal to their friends and their family. They remember birthdays. They remember the names of your spouses, your kids, and maybe even your anniversary. They like to do things the way they are and don't care about big changes, what they consider to be unnecessary. Let's talk about an individual here. Holly has been with the company for 7 years, after she got out of college. She likes her job, and her coworkers, she likes them as well, but is glad at the end of the day to get away and get home, she can be with her husband and their 3-year-old baby. On her desk, she has pictures of her wedding, family portrait, and, of course, a picture of her holding her newborn child. Now, Holly's being considered for a supervisor's job, and she's pretty sure she can do it. I mean, everyone likes working with her, and they know that they'll do her best, to make things easy on them. All right, so Holly's challenge, why are you coaching her? Being a supervisor means having to deal with employee issues. And they haven't had any real big issues in a while. But there is a guy named Marcus, who really is not carrying his weight, and everyone kind of knows that. So she dreads the thought of having to talk with Marcus about his performance. And that's why she might come to you for coaching, as an example. Because dealing with a confrontation, even though it's not a major confrontation, is pretty uncomfortable to her. Now, as I mentioned earlier, these make up about 69% of the population, RSs. So it's a huge group of people out there. Nice, normal, friendly, non-demonstrative, just want to get along, reluctant to change, and don't display their emotions a whole lot. So do you know some high S's in your life that you can recognize and say, yeah, this fits some people that I know?
No.
You didn't sound very enthused by that.
No, they were positive team players.
Yeah.
And helped to bring consensus when I would kind of get antsy.
They like consensus, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we should all agree on this. Very natural way for them to react as a group. And, again, there's all different personalities and things that are going to affect them inside of that fact that they're a high S. But these are some things you're going to see in a high S as a group that they, and we all know them. You know, they are just friendly to be around. They care about their family. They're not going to go to wild parties. If they go to a wild party because they're invited, they tend to stand in the corner with their one drink that's going to last along for hours, right? They're good people. Again, that S stands for salt of the earth. And these are the people in most organizations who are getting things done. And that's not just true for work.
Right.
It's also true, think about it, in social groups. I'm part of Kiwanis. Okay? Like I said, got some D's and some I's. We do the work, get to raise the money and things. The S's do a lot of the work. They, you know, you give them something to do, and they get it done. So They're good people. So the S has the other side as well, the side that is not necessarily as strong. This is the high S at their worst. At their worst, they're considered passive, complacent, and maybe even a little bit lazy. They lack a sense of urgency in their work, and when it gets done, it gets done. No reason to rush things. They don't like change, and they tend to demonstrate passive-aggressive behavior to try and protect themselves from all these, quote, unnecessary changes. They can be shy to the point of being timid and will seldom speak unless spoken to.
Can they really hurt an organization also if the leader really doesn't know what they're thinking? And, you know, there's a saying, still water runs deep.
Yeah.
And if they aren't utilized appropriately, they could turn on leadership.
Yeah, and they wouldn't be leading doing that with pitchforks, right?
They would
they would do it in a way that's passive aggressive.
Yeah.
And so, again, if they talk about that change concept again, they don't like the change. They think it's unnecessary because it's not been explained to them well or they haven't bought into it. They'll slow things down. And they'll keep doing things the old way. And I recall working with somebody years ago when I was still in corporate, and we had a process in place to do, it was just a regular process. And we made a change, and it was really minor change, something like, you know, we started putting a C in this column instead of an S, something like that. It was just something really, really minor. And it was met with great resistance by some of the workers. And the purpose of doing that was to help someone else downstream in the order process. Didn't impact really us at all. And I kept hearing things about, well, before the change, we did this. Before the change, this used to happen. Wait a minute. The only change was if this parameter is met, put this here. Is this a big deal? That was a big deal. We all thought it was very minor. They thought it was a big deal. And because it was a big deal to them, they were reluctant to do it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about the high S at their worst. Again, they tend to hide their feelings, both positive and negative, because they don't want to be ridiculed if they're too demonstrative. They tell you how they really feel. You might make fun of them, they think. You probably wouldn't do that, but they might think you would. All right. So Dan has been married for 10 years. He doesn't really love his wife, but what are you going to do? He comes home from dinner every night and spends his evenings every night watching television. Doesn't much care much for the shows that are on TV these days, but, that's life. His wife tried to get him to open up, but he knows nothing good can come of that. He just stays quiet and says as little as possible. He looks forward to Saturday when he and his buddies can play a little golf. He's not that good at golf because they want to spend the time practicing. So what's his real problem? His life is boring, but acceptable. Doesn't see any way to change things. In fact, he would tell you he's tried everything and nothing seems to work. So there he sits and says, okay, coach, help me. You know some folks like that?
Yeah.
Folks who, they hate their job. They hate their maybe be strong word, they're not, they're in a loveless marriage, they don't like what's going on around them, and they just sit there and they just take it. Because the possibility of change being worse keeps them where they are. So my wife is a high S, and for a period of time at her job, she was absolutely miserable. I mean, she'd come home, and she would just rant and rave to me about all things that were wrong at work. She wouldn't say anything to people who were in charge there, but she would rant and rave to me about it because I was safe. And as a good husband, honestly, what I did was I listened and I consoled and I didn't try and change her from who she was. But at some point in time, I said to her, you know, if you're that miserable, maybe you ought to consider changing jobs. And she agreed. And she said, you know what? I really should. I'm unhappy here. It's just making me miserable. I'm gonna change jobs. All right, so what's that mean? Well, I'm going to put my resume together, start applying for other jobs. So I didn't push her. About a week went by, and I said, how's the resume coming along? Well, I haven't gotten to it yet. 2 weeks. How's the resume coming along? You know, a lot of things going on. I haven't got a chance to do it yet. She's still there. It's been 3 years. Okay. She's at her job. She's unhappy. Sometimes things get better for a little bit, which case she says, see, it's not so bad. But things get worse, and she just stays there and takes it. Because the idea of changing to someplace else, it might be worse someplace else. You never know what you might get in the next boss. They could be worse than this boss is. So these folks need coaching, certainly, but coaching them is not easy because, again, that passive-aggressive nature and the tendency to not want to actually do the things that they need to get done. So if you are a high S and you're the coach, there's natural tendencies you're going to have. And one is that you may listen really, really well, but not really provide coaching. Because you may not ask the questions that have to be asked. You may not challenge the client because you have a fear of creating conflict with them. They might get mad if you challenge them too much. As a client starts setting goals, you may not help them create challenging goals. You may not want to push them hard enough. You may try and slow the client down to ensure thoroughness in what they're doing because that fast pace makes you nervous. And you may not focus possibly on tasks and actions with the client. You may focus more on how they feel. And feeling's a big part of coaching, then it turns into tasks and actions. Now, does that mean high S's can't be great coaches? No, they certainly can be. They can be phenomenal because they're patient. They do know how to listen. But if you're a high S and you're a coach, you want to be aware of these kind of things so that you make sure you're serving your client best by giving them challenging things to do, setting challenging goals. Make sure you actually do coach them and not just listen. Question about the high S as a coach? All right, so if they're your client, they have some natural strengths. Again, they're naturally patient. They tend to be realistic, tend to be rather methodical. That can be very helpful. They like to cooperate with others, including you, their coach, to get results. Or the blind spots they're not aware of, they don't express their emotions well. If they're there with you and they're fierce with their boss, or their spouse, or their next-door neighbor, they may sit there and say, yeah, they know it. They may not know it. The blind spot, they hide their emotion. and that passive aggressive response to change. So again, they may acknowledge the need for change, but may not actually do the things that have to do to make the changes actually happen. You've heard the stories of people who come back and say, so you had these three assignments to get done for your next session. Are those three things done? And you get the type responses. Those tend to be high-ask clients who will commit to things and then find reasons not to do them. Interaction with others. They want to avoid confrontation because that is something that really scares them. They tend to put their own needs last. So for as much stuff as to get done, you'll hear some coaching sessions, as it takes for everybody else, but my stuff comes last. So the challenge of coaching the high S, again, they don't like change. They tend to decide things slowly, and given the actions, they may not actually complete them. You've got to give them the accountability. That's part of your job as the coach. More with the S than any other type is that accountability. Questions to ask the high S. How does this make you feel? Get them to express that emotion. They're going to get a passive response. Dig deeper. What's the opportunity here? Let them see the potential for change and good change. How does it affect you, your family, your coworkers, et cetera? They don't want to think about that. That's going to be important to them. What do you need to do to feel better about this? That's an important question for an S. Again, to verbalize what they have to do. And when can you do this? Again, that accountability, get them moving into action. The high S, it can be a challenge for you. Get them to take the action, set a date, and actually make it happen. So I think the S's are personally, I think they're fascinating. They're such a big part of the population. And, again, friendly people. But can be challenging to coach because they may not want to move into action. All right. Questions about the high S? All right, let's talk about the high C. Now, S's and C's have, of course, a lot in common because, like the S's, the C's are going to be more reserved, more thoughtful, more slower pace. They're going to share something with the D as well, that task orientation. The questioning nature, being less somewhat skeptical, that's your high C. They tend to be detail-oriented. How do you recognize them? They tend to be focused on details and tasks and list upon list. They'll make lists of things they have to get done. So the list, create a list of the list they have to create. And they focus on those details. So what are they afraid of? The biggest thing the high C is afraid of, they might be wrong.
Oh.
Yeah, they really hate the idea of being wrong and hate to use the word hate the right word. It bothers them no end. I'll give you an example. I had worked with a partner for a number of years, and she was a high C, and we were both doing this, so we were both cognizant of all these different aspects. And one day we had a meeting in our office with a person who was going to be doing some sales stuff for us, and we were talking to this person, and we talked about they can go down. I said, you can go down to the library, and you can pull this list of the different businesses that fit into these categories, which are our target market, and that way you can find out who the CEOs are, who the CFO is, begin to make your contacts that way. And you can have this thing sorted of different ways, including by a zip code, and we want you to stick into these kind of zip codes. And my partner said, yeah, so it's really very important. She said, but by the way, he says, you can't break that down by his zip code. Well, now, I had done that. I had broken down by zip code, so I knew you could. But I said, well, you know, talk to the librarian and ask them how to go about doing this thesaurus. And I think you can break it down by zip code, but just check with them. They'll tell you for sure. My partner says, yeah, but you can't break it down by zip code. I said, well, I says, you know, I'm not sure, but check with the librarian. She'll help you do this thing out. So I'm sitting there talking to this person about sales stuff still. My partner turns away from us, and she turns her computer. She starts typing on the computer. Now, I know what she's doing. She's remotely pulling up these lists from the library to show that you can't sort them by zip code. A few minutes later, she turns back and she says, by the way, says, I just checked online, and you actually can sort them by zip code, but only if you do this step here first. That was her way of saying, well, I was wrong, but not really. It only works if you do this part first. Then it can work. So that fear of being wrong is strong in the seas, and sometimes even when they're wrong, they won't admit it. And they'll tell you why they were really right all along.
Mm.
Yeah. They tend to communicate in great detail. Oh, by the way, the natural emotion of the sea is fear. They live in a world where they fear things. They fear things going wrong. Going to go back to Marson's model. It's not a good world. I can't think about it. So I make rules to protect myself from things going wrong. Yeah, they have fear.
Oh.
Yeah. They tend to communicate in detail. They tend to communicate point by point. They tend to make lists on top of lists. You've heard the expression, I asked her what time it was. She told me how to build a watch. That's a high C. That kind of detail is very important in a high C. But again, this is an important style, and they're very important to our society. And they are 11% of the population. All right. At their best, C is accurate, careful, methodical, and is considered reliable by everyone who knows them. They excel at research. They count on they got all the details, to do all the research, to make sure the project is done right the first time and every time. They believe in following the rules. They dot their I's. They cross their T's. So everyone knows what they're doing is correct. After all, anything worth doing is worth doing correctly. They are polite. Routinely say please and thank you. Hold the doors for others. And secretly wish that everyone behave more courteously to each other. Those are society's rules they want to follow. They don't believe in showing their emotions because that would just get in the way of making the right decision. The high C has high standards for themselves and for those around them. They don't like sloppy work for themselves or others and will check and double check to make sure everything is done correctly. So, at his best, Jim is an accountant and he loves his job. He knows as long as his debits equal to credits, he knows that all is right with the world. He works for a small accounting firm. Each month, there's a list of clients that he maintains the books for. Each month, the clients send him in the bookkeeping into him. He writes the journal entries, reconciles their bank accounts, creates their income statement, and their balance sheet. He likes it because it's predictable. And he knows, for example, that Sam the plumber always have things on his desk no later than the third business day of each month. And the Dr. Smith will need a phone call or two to remind him to send things in. Now, tax season is always a grind. But you know, he actually enjoys that too. You know, not the long hours, but the satisfaction of saying the tax return is done and done correctly. That excites him. So what is his challenge? Sometimes his perfectionism gets in the way of him, and he ends up in a ready, aim, aim, aim situation. He and his lovely wife have been married, have wanted to buy a house in the school for the last few years, but every house they look at has some problem that he just can't tolerate. None of them are perfect. So, sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some people sit there and say people are obsessive compulsive. Not necessarily, okay? A tendency to make sure things are done the right way, first time, every time. Coaching high C's can be interesting and fun because they're going to want to do things the right way, and they're not going to call you if they really want to make some changes. So that's really pretty good. However, the high C at their worst can be challenging. Because at their worst, they tend to be an unbending perfectionist, and let everything be done one way, their way. They can be rigid and unwilling to compromise over even small things. They want their routine, and the smallest phrase in that routine can throw them into a tizzy. They have an inability to admit mistakes and sometimes create elaborate excuses as to why they were really correct in spite of what was actually shown as being wrong. They focus on minute details that may be incorrect and miss the bigger picture. After all, they're right, and they know they're right. So, Tiffany works in a library. She loves the books, the fact that everything is filed in a particular order. I mean, she loves Melville Dewey. Does she know the Dewey Decimal System? That's used that every single day. Of course, if she'd done it, it'd have been better than Melville did it. She's got better ideas, but he did pretty good stuff. Now, Tiffany's a little out of sorts this morning because this morning her daughter had still for breakfast. She took the last of the milk, so none left for her coffee. That upset her. She knew right then it was going to be a really bad day, and man, was she right. She found three books misfiled before noon. She's looking online at some job postings and noticed that the author had misused their, T-H-E-I-R, and they are. Why can't people get that stuff right? She saw Grace this morning as she was putting in last night's books for the returns. Now, Grace checked the books in the system and alphabetized them afterwards. Now, somebody put a quick stop to that because everyone knows first alphabetical order and then you check them in. I mean, what's this world coming to? That's the high C at their worst. Imagine that high C being your boss.
Oh, I had one.
You had one?
Yes, I did. And she was from the Army.
Oh, see, they love the Army because that's great. Everything's in order. So we all know what you tend to do is to take the best performer and make them the manager. That's how sometimes you get C's in positions where they really don't want to be necessarily, but they were the best engineer, accountant, doctor, whatever it happened to be. And since they were the best, they got made the manager, and they're not cut out to be a manager in some cases. Can C's be good managers? Yes, they can. The right job, right circumstances, they can do very, very well. But they're not natural leaders. And at their worst, they can be painful to work with. All right. So if you're a coach and you're a high C, some things to be aware of. You may be so focused on the details of the client's story that you kind of miss the big picture. Or you can miss the emotional undertones of the story, again, because you're focusing on that detail. And you may get caught up in the client's story, fact-checking, if you will, as you go along, instead of really hearing them. You may focus on the negative aspects of a situation, what can go wrong, will go wrong. Focus on that. Your sessions may be a little too structured. And you can come across as too distant or too reserved. Again, can ICs be great coaches? Absolutely. When they're listening well and they listen for the emotional undertones, they get you to the exact right questions, the exact right time, help that client really shift. But if you're a high senior coach, there's things you want to be aware of. Now, if the high C is your client, well, there are some natural strengths. They think analytically. They like to weigh the pros and cons. The old Ben Franklin list of goods and bads, they love that kind of stuff. They tend to be comprehensive problem solvers, and that can help you as you move past the coachable moment into actions. That's really good. The blind spots of the high C, they may focus on unimportant minutiae, things that aren't really important. But to them, they get hung up on it. And if they think you're being critical of them, they can become too defensive when being criticized. It's a blind spot. The high C is a client. When they interact with others around them, and I hear this a lot when I start my coach high Cs, they're overly critical of those around them because others are not quite perfect. And again, it's not intended to be mean-spirited, but if they're nitpicking other people, people resent that. With their reserved nature, they can appear cool and aloof. So recently, I was coaching a high C. She was a manager, and these very issues were, you know, right in front of us because she was dealing with somebody who was a high I, and they were butting heads, and, you know, she was constantly, quote, losing all the battles. We had talked to her about the tendency to focus on what might be wrong versus what might be right and separating big from small because she focused on minutiae when the big issues were really okay. We had to focus on and work on that. We had to work on, start a conversation with, hi, how are you doing? How was your weekend? Because it wasn't where she was focused. Just focus on the tasks and the details. So this is fairly typical. The challenge of the high, of coaching the high C, they can go to what we call analysis paralysis, where they analyze and analyze and analyze and need one more thing, one more thing, one more thing. I recall trying to help people who were trying to sell to high C's, and they kept saying, they kept coming back with just one more thing they needed, one more thing they needed. We finally focused on asking the question, all right, so you need these things. If I can answer these things for you, what else are you going to need? And when they said that's all, and they came back and said, okay, so here's your answer. Oh, there's one more thing. Wait a minute. You said there wouldn't be any more things after this. And that meant the high C might have been wrong, and they backed off. So analysis paralysis is a big issue. Creativity can be hampered by their need to follow the rules. Like the high S, they don't always express themselves and their feelings. So questions you want to ask them, what's a realistic outcome? Not perfect, what's realistic? thus need to make this decision. Going to get out of that analysis paralysis process. When will you do this by? They like that. They like the fact that there's going to be a date around it because that date's good. It gives them structure. How will this impact others? They will not have thought of that. You have to coach them through that. And they love the questions, what are the pros and cons? Right up their alley. They'll start listening for you. But again, you need to separate from them big from small. You got 47 issues here. Are any of those big? No, not really. Okay. What are the big issues? So S's and C's are a lot alike in a lot of different ways. Because they're not as demonstrative as the D's and the I's are, they can be harder to spot. So usually you can spot them through things like orientation for people versus orientation for perfection and task. So I was doing bowling this morning and watching the one bowler continually move her feet quarters at a time to get exactly the right spot before she bowled. And then if she missed, she'd talk about, I was just off this little bit right here. If I had just done this a little differently here, I could have had it. That was that high C, trying to get everything exactly right. The high S was more inclined to sit there and say, oh, man, I bowled a 126. That's my best game I've had in weeks. Wow, I feel pretty good about this. You know, the high I's, every strike, every spare was a high five for all around, and they were, you know, whooping and hollering. Good, fun to be around. High D's, much more intense as they bowl. Much, you know, again, focus on the score and winning. And you can talk to them, and they're calculating how they can win the game. Because winning's important to that high D. So you can spot it. You can use this desk a number of different ways to identify different people. I will tell you one thing. When I started studying disc and I got really immersed in it, I actually had to turn it off. Took the fun out of my life. Like being to analyze everybody and lost spontaneity. So you want to study it? You want to learn it? Yeah. There are times to turn it off and enjoy life. Questions, comments about tonight's discussions? All right. So here's where things get really important, because everybody who you know, reads about DISC online, first thing they learn about is DISC, and that's great. It's a great foundation. But the power of DISC isn't in DIS and C, in the combinations. And the fact that most people are not just one style, but multiples, and those combinations make people different and exciting and interesting. And it's what separates good DISC practitioners from poor DISC practitioners. Poor ones focus only on DIS and C. Those that are better trained and better at this process focus on combinations. We'll do there for the next two sessions, focus on combinations. Okie doke?
All right. Okay.
So you guys have a great week. We'll talk to y'all same time next week.
All righty. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Dave. Thank you.
Yep. Bye-bye.